the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
7:30, Friday the 13th of March 2020. You're welcome along to OTB AM. Something slightly different for you today, as it will be, I have absolutely no doubt, over the coming weeks. And perhaps beyond that as well. We're delighted you've tuned our way this morning. We want to hear from you over the course of the morning. It's, to borrow a phrase, a very famous Irish sporting phrase, I guess a nation holds its breath over the next little while to see exactly how all of this unfolds and the impact that it's having in sport that so frequently is a go-to, is a bit of a distraction from all the madness that happens elsewhere on this planet. But obviously that's been, and rightly so, massively impacted by events, and we shall keep you on top of those. Stay tuned to us for that and for plenty more besides as well. A slightly surreal atmosphere around the country, I think, this morning, given events over the last 24 hours. The public mood has very much shifted in terms of where we need to be at to try and tackle this crisis and this virus, and we're all trying to play our part on that. And on that basis, we have decided that Owen Shane should come from the safety of whereabouts, Owen, this morning.
From my bedroom, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's no place you want to step into, that's for sure. It's safe for me, but it's safe for me. And I guess we're all kind of taking these precautions to stay away from one another as much as I enjoy being to your left-hand side on a Friday morning, Adrian. This will just have to do for the time being.
Your insincerity, Owen, is not appreciated on a morning like this. You know that.
Well, to be honest with you, I would almost take that at this stage. We are all obviously going to go mad over the next couple of weeks. Obviously, that is very, very small beans in comparison to the big problems that people face over the next few weeks. But we'll go mad. We'll try and help people to stay a little bit more sane than they will over the next few weeks. As you say, sport is going to go by the wayside. A lot of things are going to go by the wayside. They already have. But I guess we'll try and keep up some semblance of normality, I think. That's probably the aim of the game.
Yeah, I think that people will see over the course of the day and as well over the course of the next few weeks, I'm sure, that there's a part of it. We are thinking about it, is the thing. We're thinking about it. We're all thinking about it as we go about our daily business. You're damn sure that the person you're walking alongside in the street, the person next to you in the shop, is bloody well thinking about it. So you can be safe in that knowledge, but we will try and do some other stuff as well to be that little bit of a distraction as much as we can. Over the course of the morning as well. Maybe what we might do is, because you're going to be pretty much from home over the course of the next little while, if I'm right?
Possibly. I think I might actually be in on Monday.
Okay.
From studio, so don't
going to
wipe
suggest
me
that
off
you,
just
that
yet.
You might room hop. Just give us a bit of a sort of a tour of the Shahan household I'm sure your housemates would appreciate that, right?
We can do that some morning for sure. Let's chalk that in for some morning during the coronavirus. 100% we will do MTV Cribs in my house. I will promise you that, but it's not going to happen this morning if that's what you're looking for.
I want to see a Kevin Caban style sort of tour of your fridge.
100%. I will go and stock up today. I've left it until today to stock up, and I will only obviously do a little bit of a stock up, because to stock up for too long would obviously not be very sensible whatsoever. But yeah, let's do that. We will do some sort of kitchen content next week. Let's chalk that down, because I think not only do we not have to deal with no sport at the moment, at least we have the whole topic of shock to deal with at the moment. The fact that things aren't happening is almost a story. Next week, once that shock dies down and it's just eerie silence everywhere, then that is where my kitchen will be required. So I promise you, Adrian, we can do that next week.
Yeah, I'm not sure the nation is ready for that one, I have to say, but look, we'll see. We'll see.
They'll have to be.
We'll see. Right, a little bit of a flavour of what's happening in terms of news this morning is plenty of it, and it's all along the lines that you might expect, and some of it that you just plain would not have expected at 7:35 on this Friday morning. The Arsenal head coach, Mikel Arteta, you might have seen this very late last night, he's tested positive for coronavirus. Club have closed their training ground, needless to say. Players and staff are now going to further self-isolate, because there obviously had been an element of that around the club already. Their Premier League game, needless to say, against Brighton is off now as a result. Also news that the Chelsea winger Callum Hudson-Odoi has also tested positive for COVID-19. So their full men's team squad and coaching staff at the Premier League club are also now going to self-isolate. I mean, I think we're going to see more and more of this. It throws it further into the world of bizarre, the decision by the Premier League yesterday to, certainly at that point, press ahead with the fixture list this weekend. There's an emergency meeting this morning that you just have to assume the result of which is that the pull this thing. The clubs being out might force their hand in a way that it really needn't have. But there is a meeting of Premier League and their clubs this morning. It seems like certainly a number of clubs are, if you listen to some of the well-connected football writers that were online last night, Miguel Delaney included, that a number of clubs are pretty pissed that the decision had been made for the games to go ahead. But there's a meeting this morning. All are going to convene. You've got to assume that off the back of that, that games get cancelled this weekend. Three Leicester City players are self-isolating, having shown symptoms of the virus. Manchester City's Benjamin Mendy also self-isolating after a family member was admitted to hospital as well with symptoms. So contingency plans underway from the Premier League. That meeting this morning, we'll keep you abreast as it happens and as we get some news from it. But all indications are that the result of that meeting will be that games get postponed. It strikes me that the more of these sporting events that get pulled, the ones that continue really stand out, and not in a good way. And on that note, action is going to continue at Cheltenham today with crowds present. It looks like there's going to be a four-way tussle for the Gold Cup. Album Fota, Delta Works, Santini and Landa Zobo, all strongly fancied there. The Triumph Hurdle will get the day's action underway at 1:30. Of course, we're going to get into a bit more depth on that. If the sport goes ahead, we'll chat about it. And we're going to do that in the company a little bit later on. John Duggan and Johnny Ward are there. Paddy Power will be on the line as well. We'll have a lot of that post 9 o'clock. We'll have a little bit of it before 9 o'clock as well. And that is that. Manchester United, in terms of what's actually happened, Manchester United, you will have seen perhaps last night, took a massive step towards, they're effectively in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. They beat LASK last night by 5-0. It was played behind closed doors. It was a bit of an eerie atmosphere by all accounts, but the Ilie Ighalo goal will be doing the rounds for quite a while. It was some effort. First goal of the night. Wolves came from behind. They drew 1-1 at Olympiacos. Rangers lost out 3-1 at home to Bayer Leverkusen. And when those second legs are going to be played, who the hell knows. And in golf, the Players' Championship, golf has been cancelled because of the virus. The event at Sawgrass started yesterday as normal, with organisers planning to play the last three rounds without spectators. So that's where we're at on all of that stuff. We'll, as that further news comes through in terms of cancellations and all that, we will let you know as we progress through the day. 7:38 on OTB AM. We do want to hear from you this morning. Get your thoughts into us, whether they be sport or maybe more appropriately non-sport at this time. Do get them into us. Here's what's coming up for you over the course of the next couple of hours. Andy Mitten was at that game in Austria last night, one of just 500 people that were in the ground. We'll get his thoughts on exactly what it was like to be there, I suppose, in the first instance, and then after that, obviously what happened on the field and the impact for Manchester United over the course of the season. A few other bits and bobs as well that we might talk to Andy about too, so he's coming your way in just a few minutes' time. John Duggan's Cheltenham will be with you at about 8 o'clock. We've picked out our top five stories this morning. There are a couple in there that don't involve coronavirus, so we'll be bringing you there those stories as well a little bit later this morning. What to watch is a little bit later in the day. We're going to have the Paddy Power show for you just after 9 o'clock. And we'll be hearing from Kevin Caban as well to get his thoughts on the potential closing down of the Premier League fixture list over the next short while. He was also on duty for that Manchester United game last night, so I'm sure we'll have a few thoughts on that too. So that's what's coming up over the course of the morning. You can get us on WhatsApp 087 9 180 180. If you want to get your thoughts into us, please do. We really want to hear from you, whatever platform it is you happen to be watching or listening to us on this morning. We'll like to hear from you as well. So it's myself and Owen with you between now and around 9:30 or thereabouts. It is time for the newspapers. OTB AM. All right, we're going to go to offtheball.com first to show you what's happening up there. There's all the very latest developments in relation to cancellations and postponements, and those in the world of sport who have actually contracted coronavirus as well, including Mikel Arteta, as you can see there on the front page of offtheball.com, and plenty more as well besides. And also that meeting, that Premier League meeting this morning to take place amid all those positive COVID-19 tests. So yeah, that's coming here. That's up on offtheball.com this morning if you want to go up there and check that out. Let's have a look at the newspapers at 7:40 on this Friday morning. We're going to kick things off with the Irish Examiner this morning, where a picture tells a thousand words. Shut down. Sport, like everything else, presses pause as COVID-19 spreads, it says here, and plenty of coverage of that inside as well. As well as the thoughts of Ronan O'Gara about its impact on the top 14 in France. And he's also got a good piece in there. We might talk about it a little bit later on in relation to, as he calls them, the agent provocateur. This is the from the last round of Six Nations that's actually been played. That's the Irish Examiner this morning.
It's an excellent pronunciation. I would have gone with agents, provocateurs, personally, Adrian. But yeah, it's a good piece. We'll get into that shortly. The Irish Daily Mirror this morning leads with the Mikel Arteta story. Bugs Strife is the headline. And then they've got a few bullet points with the coronavirus icon beside all the other points in the world of football overnight. Euro 2020 likely to be postponed for 1 year. League of Ireland, Pro 14, Rugby and GA all announced shutdown. And then, as mentioned, Arsenal boss Arteta diagnosed with virus. But disbelief in Europe as English football carries on. You have to suspect that that will change over the next couple of hours. You've got Odion Ighalo there celebrating in the deserted stadium. And you've got Brendan Rodgers' quotes as well. There's no doubt Prem should be called off. We should not risk public health. So that's Brendan Rodgers' take on the coronavirus. Because, of course, the Old Firm still set to go ahead this weekend.
Yeah, we should see on that one. The Irish Independent has some good stuff for you this morning, including some strong leadership is something that's really required globally at this time. And you think that Paul Flynn of the GPA has definitely come forward in that regard this morning, where he has called on everybody in the GAA essentially, but most specifically, obviously, given his remit to inter-county managers and to players to sort of abandon, he says, all collective training, collective gym sessions and collective team meetings. Obviously, this was from the GAA ban, and he's reiterating that and saying it's essential that we all show leadership and play a role in this and hold ourselves accountable for our actions for the betterment of all our communities. And it'll be a sentiment that's echoed right around, because while the main events obviously are getting pulled, you perhaps around the country there are teams at all levels, whether it be GAA or rugby or whatever else, that are considering whether they should go ahead in terms of training and collective training and that sort of stuff. And he's calling on teams to heed what's being said by the GAA. But on that note, there is a piece here from Rory O'Connor as well, saying that grounded Leinster will continue to train as rugby grounds to a halt. Now, that was the position as of last night. Whether that continues as well, we should see. Leinster and Ulster will immediately switch focus, he says, to their Heineken Champions Cup quarterfinal against Saracens and Toulouse and continue to train as normal. The Pro 14 obviously was cancelled along with the rest of the Irish rugby season yesterday. So, I mean, it definitely throws collective training into doubt as well. I'm not 100% sure how that's something that can continue. And fears growing for Tier 2 amid virus shutdown. It's Colm Keyes here as well, that the new Tier 2 football championship's in jeopardy this summer after the GAA suspended activity until March 29th.
Yeah, well, there's very little way that they'll actually be able to decipher who is in Tier 2 in time for the due date of Tier 2 if it was to go ahead. But I think really there's a realisation that even the start date this summer looks like an ambitious quest for a lot of these organisations. The Irish Daily Star this morning leads with Wipeout and a picture of a photographer wearing a mask at the Manchester United game last night. Euro 2020 to be delayed a year. Ireland's playoff in serious peril. Arsenal boss Arteta test positive, and GAA and IRFU halt all games. There is Juan Mata as well celebrating as Manchester United won 5-0 last night. And Sam Day at the office for Davy. That is, of course, Sam Crowe and Davy Russell there celebrating an incredible win yesterday.
The Irish Times front page of the sports section this morning has done incredibly well not to mention the coronavirus, so fair play to them. Ighalo leads United route in front of empty stands, writes Jamie Jackson, who was in Austria for that 5-0 route last night. Jonathan Liu writes about criticisms of someone's methods rooted in football snobbery. He says here, drilling a team to be totally secure in defence is no less an art form than producing one that relentlessly attacks, which is a fascinating talking point that I know was Graeme Souness touched on in the coverage of Liverpool during the week, and how it wouldn't be his type of football, and he didn't really want to see it effective and all as it was. And Neto rescues draw for Wolves in Greece, obviously, and that is pretty much what's going on the front page of the Irish Times sports.
Let's move on to The Guardian this morning. It's a photograph of Odion Ighalo celebrating last night for Manchester United. They won 5-0 in Lask. Odion steals the show. Ighalo's stunner sets United on path to easy Europa League victory in front of empty stands. And the other story there is Euro 2020 could be pushed back a year as fixture backlog grows. So this obviously throws up a whole lot of complications from the Republic of Ireland's point of view as well, with regards to who will actually be the manager when we conclude this qualifying campaign. If we qualify, who will be the Ireland manager going into Euro 2021, potentially, is what it might become.
Yeah, interesting one, all right. The Racing Post for you this morning is a beautiful photograph of an absolutely beautiful trophy, it has to be said. There's no question about it. Why it's been competed for today is really the main question that you would have. But they all want it, but who has what it takes is the question here. Racing goes behind closed doors in Ireland as coronavirus spreads, but the British government says too soon for similar move. present it without comment, I think, is the phrase.
The Times London edition is, we shouldn't be playing, says top clubs. This is Manchester City's Benjamin Mendy among players in quarantine and Euro 2020 set to be postponed for a year. So we will have some sort of further information on this over the next couple of hours, you suspect. Lunacy, really, that the Premier League is still set to go ahead, but surely sense still prevails today. Marler banned for 10 weeks. That was, of course, for grabbing the crotch of Alan Wynne-Jones. And Tennis Chief joins Manchester City. So this is Stuart Fraser saying that the performance director of the Lawn Tennis Association is to join Manchester City this summer in the same position. This is Simon Timpson. He's been enticed away from his role overseeing the professional pathway in British tennis by the opportunity to work under Pep Guardiola. So a big appointment there for Manchester City. An actual story that isn't involving coronavirus, which is fairly conspicuous on a morning like today.
Yeah, we probably won't go too far without coming back to it at any point, I would think, over the course of the day. Here's the hurl for you this morning. It says, don't break bad. GPA calls managers to respect rule as FAI yet to make a call on training. It is the most natural next step, and it's definitely going to happen. It's only a matter of time, as the public mood has shifted so much really over the last 24 hours in terms of one's interaction socially. You would think that a group of a squad of 30, 40 players gathering for training is, in terms of that social mood, going to become something that's not all that acceptable very soon. That's the hurl for you this morning.
A fairly impactful photograph on the Irish News sports section. On the brink of lockdown, reads the headline, sporting schedule is decimated by coronavirus. That is a photograph from LASK versus Manchester United last night.
The Telegraph for you. Yeah, I mentioned it a little bit earlier on there. Odion Ighalo in celebratory mode last night following his goals. He points to the skies in a very surreal setting in the background there. As United win behind closed doors, Premier League players display coronavirus symptoms and football across the world is suspended. Angry clubs ask, why do we play on? A fantastic question that I think is going to be answered and answered in a satisfactory fashion, I think, by all indications, from the Premier League meet this morning.
Finally for me then this morning, it is the London Independent. We have a graph there of Fred and Odion Ighalo celebrating as he scored in the 5-0 win last night. Formula One to cancel Australian Grand Prix is their main story there. And UEFA prepared to move Euros, writes Miguel Delaney. So an increasing number of stories now suggesting that the Euros will become a 2021 competition rather than this summer.
Just a quick reminder that the stories up on offtheball.com this morning, a lot of it, obviously, if you're looking for a one-stop shop of everything that's off, and maybe more appropriately as the days and weeks progress, what's actually on, which is next to nothing, do check out offtheball.com. We'll have plenty more to keep you entertained over the coming weeks as well up there. And right here too, so it's 7:48 on this Friday morning. We've John Hoare on YouTube wondering, Owen, if you're in isolation in South Kerry, which we've already established is not the case. I mean, it could be an option as we progress here.
No Wi-Fi in South Kerry, he should know that.
Right, plea to the government that once all this stuff sort of stops for a bit of sort of 5G down there.
Let's sort out the real issues in this country, Adrian, is what I'm suggesting.
Celtic Rangers must go ahead. Need to see Rangers get hammered to get Paddy's weekend started, says Rob Healy. Facetiously, I'm going to assume. And yeah, plenty more as well coming in there up on YouTube and everywhere else too. So over the course of the morning, do keep those coming in. We've Andy Mitten lined up. He was in Austria last night for that 5-0 thumping by Manchester United in the Europa League last 16. First leg, no indication exactly if or when the second leg is going to go ahead, but Andy was at that game last night. We're going to get his thoughts in just a moment's time. Before that, here's John Giles. Was on with Nathan last night talking about the impact and perhaps at times lack thereof that Bruno Fernandes has had at his new club.
Well, he's an improvement. I think he's done well, but I don't think he's been the driving force in what they've done, Nathan. I think it happens when somebody new comes in and they win the matches and then they do get great credit. I wouldn't put down his signing as the reason that they've done it in recent weeks. I think he has contributed to it, honestly. I keep them saying like he looks like Scholes playing. And we might have spoken about this last week. Well, I don't see him as a midfield player at all. I think he's a goal-scoring player coming from midfield. You know, in fact, and I don't want to be too hard on him, but in the match against Everton last week, they were well up in the first half. Mm-hmm. The second half, Everton got on top, and you couldn't see him. And even last week in the Manchester derby, when Manchester United were on top, it was fine. But when City did get on top for a long spell, and again, he wasn't to be seen. You know, he's not going to influence the game. He's going to be a goal-scoring midfield player, in my opinion, which is there's no harm to have one of those. It's good. But I don't think he's the influence in the team that people have made him out. It's handy for the press guys, in my opinion, that since he's come in, the results have improved. He has contributed to that, but not as much, in my opinion, as the media have made out.
Yeah, John Giles there in conversation with Nathan last night. We're going to put those comments in just a moment to Andy Minton. But before that, I'm delighted to say Andy does join us on the line. Good morning to you, Andy.
Good morning.
Andy on the line from United We Stand, obviously. I note that your piece in The National last night, a river without water, an opera without music. Odd atmosphere, clearly?
Yeah, it was weird. And it felt a little bit hollow, even though the players did exactly what was asked for them. I felt a bit sorry for Lask. They had injuries, they had players playing out of position, they don't have any strength in depth in the squad, and they didn't have any fans behind them. They had their best ever European run, their only ever European run, and they had, 150 fans inside the stadium. There were Manchester United fans who travelled as well, and despite the game being closed behind closed doors, they were very pleased to be told that they'll receive £350 each from Manchester United. I thought that was a very good gesture to help with their travel costs because they weren't able to claim any of them back. And then there was the game, 5-0 away in Europe. United now 11 unbeaten, 9 clean sheets. They're scoring goals for fun, but I don't know whether it will actually matter. I don't know whether the Europa League is going to continue. I don't know whether there's going to be a second leg. It was just really weird. And I, given my background in United We Stand and fan culture, I'm a fan of fans. And when they're not there, they're really, really missed. And I know lots of people who travelled, rightly or wrongly, to Austria last night, and they just stood 100 metres away. They could see like little bits of the game through the fence. And it was weird, and it's not something I'd like to repeat. I'm not a fan of football behind closed doors.
Yeah, was there a sense from the fans, Andy, that like this is something that's obviously understandable given the circumstances? Or was there a sense of frustration that they'd got that far, they wanted to get in and have a look at it?
Oh, of course. I mean, this is only football. The matter of public health is of a far bigger concern, and the decision wasn't made by Lask, who lost €1 million, and they were put under incredible pressure. And I don't think anybody criticised the club. It was a decision made by the Austrian government. So people understand the reasons why. And nobody was protesting against the fact that the game had been put behind closed doors. They were disappointed. Of course they were. And also that there were 500 people inside the ground. You had players, coaches, medical staff, security, a couple of hundred fans. And two or three Manchester United fans managed to get themselves inside the ground and make themselves heard, which was appreciated by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when he was asked about it after the match.
Yeah. On the match itself, like, it is hard to read too much. You've already hinted at it there. Hard to read too much into this game when you're taking on its own merits in terms of like no home support being there. Not a well-financed team in terms of the comparisons with the Premier League sides. And obviously, as you mentioned, without several players as well. But all that notwithstanding, more encouraging signs for United here.
Yes, because they're winning and they're keeping clean sheets and they're playing well. And since that defeat against Burnley in January, things have really started to turn. The fans were up in arms at that point. United had been beaten 4 times in January alone, and it needed to change. I said that when I spoke to you at the time, and it has changed. And Bruno Fernandes has been a major reason. He's not the only reason. There's lots of players playing well who were not playing well. Luke Shaw being one of them. Harry Maguire is doing well. And what Fernandes has done, he's connected the team. So Maguire hadn't scored from a set piece. So you've got this real aerial threat, and he'd done absolutely nothing all season. Suddenly, Chelsea away, corner, bang. His delivery from set pieces is excellent. And it's not just him. Odion Ighalo, he scored 4 goals now. He's only made 3 starts. I asked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer about him after the game last night, and he talked from the point of view of a striker of the way that he dealt with that goal, juggling the ball between his feet three or four times to create space for himself before volleying the shot into the top corner of the goal. He said no goalkeeper in the world would have stopped that. So his enthusiasm and his personality has lifted the players as well, because you had a lot of very good players there. This is a team with the second highest wage bill in world football, and they were vastly underachieving. And this season, we don't know what's going to happen, whether the games are even going to be played. But United are looking really good in the Europa League. They're in the FA Cup, and they're a decent bet, I think, for a top four or five finish, which could get them into the Champions League if Manchester City's ban is upheld. Manchester United shouldn't be celebrating finishing fifth or fourth. They've still not won anything like as many games this season as they should have done. But I think people are starting to see what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is trying to do. He's always had support at the games. People have always sang his name. And that's been very different from the online rage whenever Man United don't win a game. And I know he appreciated that support. And there's times when it's been extremely trying. But he's having his, I wouldn't say his best moment, but he's coming close to it now. Because I think he's 11 unbeaten, just about matches that great run when he came in, although he won his first eight there. And there hasn't been a high as that win at Parish yet, but it's looking that it's built on more stable grounds than a year ago.
Andy, there are obviously so many bigger issues in the world right now than whether or not the Premier League will go ahead. But at the same time, you said yourself in this piece that you are somebody who is a fan of fans as much as anything else. Like, what will this do over the next few months of the lives of football fans in the UK and Europe-wide, not having football, not having this thing to go to and watch week in, week out?
There's not really a precedent. I suppose you'd have to go back to the Second World War when, again, far bigger matters were at play, or summer of the winter of 1963, when I think games were cancelled for 7, 8, 9 weeks because it was the harshest winter of the last century. And Manchester United flew away to the warmer climes of Cork, Southern Ireland, because that was seen to be much more milder than Northern England. I think now they'd be straight to Abu Dhabi or to Dubai or to Marbella or wherever. But that was when Paddy Creran joined the club, and his first trip was to Cork, which he was absolutely delighted about because Paddy considers himself to be firmly Irish, even though I point out that he was born in Glasgow and he's actually British. But we'll have the argument until the day he dies. What will happen now is that it'll be a weird one for fans. And just speaking as a journalist, in the last month alone, I've made 8 different trips, and that all stops as of today. I'm going to 2 games a week normally. In the last week, I've been in Bucharest, I've been in Manchester, I'm in Austria at the moment, and that just all stops now. So what am I going to be writing about? I don't know whether games are going to be played behind closed doors. I don't know whether journalists are going to be allowed to go to those games. I'm supposed to be at Barca Napoli next Wednesday, but fan culture is a really strong thing among readers of United We Stand. It's part of the reason why so many people came to Austria. It's almost like a way of life. You go to the game, you see the world, you're with your friends. People are very fortunate to be in a position to do that. And a lot of the type of people who would come to somewhere like Linz, and they might be young and not maybe have a commitment of a family yet, or the kids might have grown up. And I spoke to a lad last night, Finno, who'd flown in from Dublin. He goes to every single Manchester United game. He used to play for Bray, so he knows his football. And he goes to every single game. And he's going to Tottenham on Sunday. He'll be getting back into Dublin now. And the commitment levels are incredible. Some people would say crazy and irrational, like my wife when I told her yesterday morning that I was going to Linz. But it's my job as well. The fans are paying huge amounts to go and watch all these games, and that just stops. And watching football on TV, while that might be what 99% of fans do, it's not what the match-going fans do. So to take that out of their lives will mean a big, big change to their lives, obviously for the reasons that we know about, which are very important reasons.
Yeah, and I mean, we see there is the fan concern and the public health concern, and even down to the granular detail of seeing that Mikel Arteta obviously has tested positive for this thing now, Callum Hudson-Odoi as well, and like there is suddenly then the impact on the squads themselves and the players themselves, and you know, even in terms of collective training. The meeting is to happen this morning, Andy, that the Premier League emergency meeting, that it seems as if they might do a U-turn on yesterday's decision to press ahead with the games, probably in any way, behind closed doors or not. Is that your expectation of how this plays out?
Yeah, but it's such a fast-moving story that when I arrived yesterday in Vienna, within the first hour, I'm told fans get compensation. The game tonight's in doubt. It's a really quickly moving story, and obviously in Spain and in other countries, it is as well. It seems that when managers and players are getting the virus and testing positive, then you can't expect them to play games. The opponents would have a massive advantage. You know, don't know what Arteta's current health is, but he's not going to be able to manage Arsenal, is he, this weekend? The games behind closed doors idea, I didn't enjoy last night. I just felt it was hollow, and I don't want to take away from the performance of Manchester United players, because they did everything that was asked of them, but it just didn't feel right. Football without fans is just not right. And, you know, the Premier League, obviously the economic interests are high for them. And for a lot of football fans, they'll think, well, we just want to watch the game anyway, even if it's behind closed doors. But it just doesn't feel right. I'm sorry, I was just sat there thinking, this is wrong, this shouldn't be happening. And if the players are testing positive as well, then they're not going to be able to play anywhere, because football's a contact sport and they're coming into direct contact with each other.
Yeah. Just to go back, we'd John Giles, I don't know if you'd heard that clip just before we came on. You've touched on slightly already, but just to firmly get your thoughts on the Bruno Fernandes situation, to be clear about what John was saying, it wasn't that he was doubting his quality or the impact that he's having a game, because he did preface it by saying that he's very impressed with Bruno Fernandes. His main gripe is that when United are on the back foot, which for a short time against City, obviously they were, that he's the guy that maybe you want to see a little bit more of and is not seeing enough of. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think John's opinion is to be respected. My elders tell me he was the best player that Sir Matt Busby ever let go, and you know, value his opinion. I mean, Bruno has changed the dynamic completely of Manchester United, not just through what he's doing himself, but by lifting the other players around him. And he's someone who's very sure of himself. He's not come in and had a difficult first season, like Fred, who's come good. And he's better in a more defensive role. Bruno doesn't have to be as good in a defensive role. Football's not played with 4-4-2 anymore. You're not looking for a Roy Keane-type midfielder, although everybody would clearly love a Roy Keane-type midfielder. And I do think he's more attack-minded. He links the play well. He always looks to push the ball forward. He takes free kicks. He takes corners. He's got goals in him. I spoke to a scout, a manager at Benfica, who knew him very well just before he signed, and he described him as box-to-box. And I think Ole Gunnar would rather him play in the sort of more advanced role. Similarities have obviously been made with Paul Scholes. I joked during the game on Sunday that they should build a statue of him on top of Manchester's highest building, like the Christ the Redeemer in Rio, overlooking Manchester, his arms spread out wide. With it being Twitter, some people took it literally and said, you know, it's too early to do that. As if we'd be doing that anyway. But he has made a significant impact. He really has. And Igalo has also done exceptionally well. And these two signings were needed. And when it went into the last week of the transfer window, there were a lot of Manchester United fans who had a real down on the club. They were very sceptical, cynical, and they're saying, we're not buying anybody here. Well, they've got two players in. And getting a striker in, as Chelsea, as Barcelona found out, is not easy, and they managed to pull it off, and they deserve some credit for that. But Bruno is a player that really excites me. The football under Louis van Gaal, under Jose Mourinho, by the end was dreadful. And at the moment, the football's good under Manchester United, and this winning run has included wins against Bruges and Tranmere and Lask, but he beat Manchester City, and City are probably man-to-man a better team than United today, and they could put United under pressure, which they did do. But they didn't win the game. Their record at Old Trafford's been brilliant, and they got beat 2-0. Yeah. And you've got Scott McTominay. He can be the enforcer behind. There's lots of positives with Manchester United right now.
And they didn't have to go with Brian Kidd up front as well, which was the ultimate sort of relief, obviously, of last weekend, Andy. The Liverpool story, just to finally, before we let you off, I certainly maintained at the start of the season that they Premier League was clearly their priority, and that if they got bounced out of the Champions League at some point, that it wouldn't have been the greatest disaster for them. Now, it's easy to say that in hindsight, I suppose, and easy for them to maybe rationalise it in that way as well. How much does the Atletico loss tarnish the standing of that team in the court of public opinion?
Well, Atletico beat English teams, that's what they always do. I put a stat out the other day, I think 8 of the 9 times they've met English teams since 91 when they knocked Man United out, they've won. Only Bolton Wanderers have knocked Atletico Madrid out. And this Liverpool team is clearly an exceptional side. And as you said to any Liverpool fan at the start of the season, this is where you'll be at the start of March. I'm sure they would have all accepted that. But they've gone out the FA Cup, went out the League Cup, and now they're out of Europe. And if you're going to compare them to the treble winners, well, there's not really a comparison. They're going to win the league, and they might win it with a record points total. And that's fantastic. And they're clearly exceptionally good. And there are also risks that come when you're playing cup competitions. I always remember Gerard Piqué saying that. You can go out, and Liverpool dominated against Atletico Madrid. And you need a little bit of luck, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Sheringham found that when Manchester United won the treble. But look at the history books, it's going to show that United have won the treble. I can't believe I've twisted this into comparing this Liverpool team with Manchester United.
Listen, we're happy to go there, you know that.
That's what a lot of United fans are doing. Yeah. They still fear that Liverpool are... I think they've all accepted that Liverpool are going to win the league, and that's not something they're comfortable with either. Manchester United need to be challenging for league titles. That's not something they've done since 2013.
Yeah, but they might be as close now as maybe they ever were. Andy, pleasure as always. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Andy Mitten there from United We Stand, who was at that game in Austria last night. United thumping LASK by 5-0, and Andy's interesting thoughts there. If you just came in halfway through that, you can check out the full piece. It'll be up very shortly on offtheball.com and all of our usual social channels as well. It is 7 minutes past 8 on this Friday morning. It's OTB AM, the sports breakfast show from Off The Ball. Adrian with you in studio. Owen Sheehan is not, as one of our YouTube commenters suggested, in the wilds of West Kerry. He is, in fact, in his gaff, and he's going to be with us. Staying with us this morning over the course of the morning. We've John Duggan, who's live from Cheltenham. Yes, folks, it goes ahead. Gold Cup Day, live from Cheltenham next.
OTB AM.
The Cheltenham Show.
On Off The Ball.
Brought to you by Paddy Power. Cheltenham's coming home.
8 minutes past 8 on this Friday morning. John Duggan from Cheltenham, come on in.
Adrian, good morning.
It's going ahead.
It is, yeah. I spoke to Ian Renton, the boss of Cheltenham, last night, and the UK government advice is that mass gatherings are still permitted. That's Boris Johnson's government advice, and Cheltenham are following that. But this is such a fast-moving wildfire situation, Adrian, that the Premier League are meeting, well, they're having a conference call this morning at 10:30 about whether they should have a temporary suspension or play matches behind closed doors. I get the sense it could be a temporary suspension to Premier League games, given the Mikel Arteta news and the Callum Hudson-Odoi news. But Cheltenham will proceed, and this Gold Cup Day will happen with about 60,000 spectators from 1:30. It's the only event in the world today involving Irish fans where you got two different jurisdictions having two different approaches.
Mm. Yeah. John, that's like a really interesting point, and it's a borderline dangerous point that there are people who are British nationals being told one thing by their government and Irish nationals being told something drastically different by their government, and allied on top of that, a lot of them will be flying home tonight or are expected to fly back into Ireland tonight.
Yes, personally, I feel fine. I will be spending the next 2 weeks at home. Don't worry about the fire alarm there. That's just a test. The situation with the Department of Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, I heard, was speaking last night about there'll be interviews, I believe, at the airport, just to remind people that if they're showing any symptoms that they should self-isolate. But I get the sense here that this has moved so rapidly that people who have come to Cheltenham or have been planning to come to Cheltenham for months have just followed advice from their health bodies, from their governments. And everything obviously changed yesterday when Leo Varadkar made that statement at 11 o'clock about the now different situation with Ireland, which has seen the Irish sporting events cancelled until March 29th.
Yeah, it does. It feels like you probably don't have a sense of it over there, John, but certainly here the public opinion has shifted so much over the last 24 hours in terms of how we should sort of behave, and definitely being in the middle of that number of people, or that sort of a mass gathering, obviously, is something that we've very much shifted away from here. But the people who are there, obviously, have no sense of that, and by all accounts, I was looking at some videos online yesterday that people are enjoying themselves and they're really not thinking about the juggernaut that's coming down the track here.
Well, I spoke to people last night and they do feel that way, that once they're here in the racing, they're in the bubble of the racing, but then they're being reminded by text messages or by calls from people back home of what the situation is back in Ireland. So you do feel like you're almost living in a delay here. You feel like you're living in a delay from what's going on elsewhere, and you do feel like you're living in a bubble. And it's bizarre. I've kept on saying this phrase all week, the Twilight Zone. But I did get the sense from Tuesday when I put out that tweet about the crowd, the Welcome to the Jungle tweet, that there was a very negative reaction towards that. And understandably so, if people are concerned for public health. That has moved significantly now to where people really feel, I kind of the view now that Cheltenham should not be happening today. And that is not some kind of, I'm late to the table, I'm just joining in with what everybody else is saying. This has moved so quickly from like the government on Monday here saying that it would be very, very premature to be cancelling sporting events, and that there was no risk. And now we're at a situation where the UK government, I actually quoted here from Patrick Vallance. This is the chief scientific advisor for the UK government. Not a major way to tackle this epidemic. Not a major way to tackle this epidemic, cancelling sporting events. But I think that will change given what's happening in the United States with the Players' Championship and all the major sport being cancelled there, with the Australian Grand Prix, and with the fact that Premier League and UEFA, I think that we could have a postponement to Euro 2020 until next year to free up the calendar for Premier League matches we played potentially later in the year. So Cheltenham does feel like a complete outlier in that. But I still think it's going ahead now, and that's the way it is.
Yeah. John, has there been advice in terms of personal hygiene and stuff like that over there? Obviously, there's been pictures of the hand sanitizer stations and the big print saying don't pass it on. Outside of that, has there been advice? Like, obviously, the whole spacing thing isn't exactly possible in those sort of confines.
No, it's just you see a lot of the kind of the five or six guidelines of what you should do generally about washing your hands and, you know, when you're coughing and you're sneezing, to kind of cover yourself or to wipe the tissue and put it away. But, you know, you're not seeing, I'm not walking around the race course and seeing, oh, okay, this is what we need to do right now. And once again, when I turned up for the first race yesterday, the crowds are there. They're all mingling together in a betting ring as they normally would. Now, there was less of them in my opinion, but they were still doing it. And they're still going to do it today. Now, Gold Cup Day traditionally has been a very, very busy day at Cheltenham where you don't have a lot of space. I do expect the crowds to be down about 10,000, but it is a very strange situation. And I do have a little bit of sympathy for the people who've come here thinking that, okay, we're going to have a good time. And then this rapidly evolving and moving situation, a global pandemic is happening. And then people are feeling a little bit uncertain, and probably a lot of people are feeling that they probably should be at home now.
One last one on it, John. 5 hours, a bit over 5 hours before the first race. There's no possibility, because like you've identified, obviously, the fact that people went over. Things have changed since people went over is the thing. And we're acutely aware of that here. And, you know, When people went over there, obviously, on whatever it would have been, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that things were in a slightly different space than they are now. And so it's in that context that it would have been fine for Cheltenham to have gone, listen, things have changed and we're going to pull the plug here. 5 hours before that first race, they're obviously not going to pull it at this point.
They're not going to pull it because what happened yesterday with that UK government advice about mass gatherings. And like, what happens to Cheltenham if they do pull it? Like, are the UK government going to guarantee, you know, that they'll be, you know, compensated for that? I don't know. But surely yesterday, when Boris Johnson was making this statement about how the UK were tackling the coronavirus outbreak, sporting gatherings, there should have been a clear definition around that. And the clear definition was that the Wales game is going ahead, that this is going ahead, and that the Premier League is going ahead this weekend. And now we've had the Arteta situation and the Odoi situation and public opinion moving with that. And the likes of Piers Morgan going, why in Ireland is this happening in Ireland or Denmark or wherever? And then why is it in the UK? I can't understand. I'm not no medical expert. Why you've got two countries the closest to each other, adjacent to each other, that have completely different responses to this? It boggles the mind, to be honest. Boggles the mind.
Yeah. Right. Well, we watch this space. Just in a couple of minutes, we have you're going to join us a little bit later on when we get stuck into the racing in a bit more detail. Are you up down for the week?
I'm down for the week slightly. I'm slightly down, but there's always a final day. Should you be given tips or whatever in the situation? But I think the horse that I'm looking as a nap today is Billaway in the Fox Hunters Chase. Willie Mullins is back to form. I had a couple of winners this week now, Willie, and I think his horses are running well. And Patrick, this has always been the aim for this horse, Billaway in the Fox Hunters Chase. That's the race after the Gold Cup, about 10 past four. He's about a 5-1 shot with Paddy Power. And then in the Gold Cup, I probably have, like, it's a wide open race. I think Album Photo, the favourite, is very solid. I think Delta Works got a chance. Santini has a chance. Clan des Obo has a chance. But a one for a price. For an each way about at a price, Monoly at 22-1. I think if Monoly stays the trip, he's in a great preparation. He jumps well. Rachel Blackmore, I think, will get a great tune out of him. Henry de Bronhead's horses are in form. I'm not sure if Monoly will stay, but if Monoly does stay, having been second in the novice chase here, second at the festival twice, actually, I think he could be overpriced at 22-1 in the big one.
Very quickly, you probably have to go shortly, John, but just on yesterday, lovely moment afterwards, Davy Russell and Eddie O'Leary, the little bit of warmth between them, given the history that they've had, obviously, in relation to Sam Crowe. Faugheen made a hems of it, or what's the what is the story after that one?
I think Sam Crowe, it's a funny one. Sam Crowe is a quirky horse. He nearly threw it away up the run-in, and he beat Mellon in the photo, and it's great to see him back to form. Faugheen is 12 now, and he's nothing to prove, and I think he'll be retired. If Punches Down does happen, even behind closed doors, he'll be retired then. So JB McManus has had a great week. He's had 6 winners. Gordon Eddie has got 6 winners now. The Stairs Hurdle went to a 50-1 shot. Look, hopefully, the strangest thing about this age is this is probably the last, big sporting day for I don't know when. Like, when are we going to have a next big sporting day? And this is the last one. So I suppose as uncertain as things are, and as disconcerting as things are, we just probably have to enjoy today and let the Gold Cup commence.
All right, John. We'll talk to you in a little bit. John Duggan on the line.
All right,
there,
thanks, man.
Live
Cheers.
From Cheltenham. And we press ahead, bizarre and all as it is. We press ahead. 18 minutes past 8 on this Friday morning. Be sure to tune in to, as well, immediately after OTBAM this morning, just after 9 o'clock, for the Cheltenham show. We're going to have Tom Malone is going to be in studios. He's had a brilliant week so far. The bettering certainly is Tom. John is going to be back in the line. Paddy Power himself will be with us. Johnny Ward as well, live from the racecourse, giving you all the inside information and all the information you need to know for the greatest show on turf. Tom is going to be with me in studio as well. As mentioned, it's all brought to you in association with our Cheltenham partner, Paddy Power. Cheltenham is coming home. So that is that's coming your way just after 9 o'clock this morning. But it is 19 minutes past 8 on this Friday. Still plenty to come. Tom's going to join us in studio. Myself and Owen, live from West Kerry / his gaff in North Dublin. We're going to pick out our best top 5 stories this morning. Some of them even not coronavirus related. So that's coming your way in just a couple of moments' time. Do keep in contact with us over the course of the morning. You can hit us up on WhatsApp if you want, 087-9180-180. We're on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook and all the usual channels as well. So wherever it is that you're consuming us this morning, we're delighted to have you with us. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we're very much in the phase of a nation holds its breath, and we're going to be with you over the coming weeks and months, and we're thinking of you and we want to hear from you, and we will be here for you. We'll talk sport and we'll talk about the impact that the virus is having in the world of sport as well. So we will be with you over the coming weeks. Be rest assured of that. Now, the GAA obviously had some interesting things to say last night. Their Director of Communications, Alan Milton, spoke with Nathan on Off the Ball. He warned that he hopes that all members are going to adhere to the emergency measures that were introduced by the association.
I think, and I hope, that everybody over the last 48 hours has come to terms with the seriousness of this outbreak. And I think what's become clear is that as a community, that people need to come together through this. And I guess that's something that the GAA will be focusing on with this suspension, that people follow through on this, that obviously there's going to be no club games, there's not going to be no inter-county games, but also that there are no training sessions, that there isn't, that people are taking this serious enough, that there's no, well, let's just get together, lads, on a Tuesday night and have a quick run around.
No, I think compliance is absolutely massive in this regard, and I think people need to take ownership of what we've tried to deliver. We can't police that from Croke Park, but we like to think we've got very responsible people at every level of the organisation, on committees and not on committees. It's really up to them to step up to the plate. I think situations such as this bring out the best in people. I think it will be for the common good, and especially for those members of our communities who are on the margins or maybe weak and vulnerable. I think we owe it to them, and as a society, I sincerely hope we all pull together. If this small gesture goes some way in helping in that process, it will have been worthwhile. But I'd like to think that most people will see the rationale behind this. It's been done for the right reasons. Of course, it's a small inconvenience, but when you think of what we're dealing with here, this is, as I've already said, this is bigger than sport, and it has the potential to be a whole lot bigger and a whole lot worse if people don't clue into the severity or the potential severity of the situation as it unfolds.
Yeah, that's Alan Milton, Director of Communications with the GAA, in conversation with Nathan last night. When you consider the heft of an association in a country like Ireland of the GAA, certainly some leadership in that regard, which we've seen in relation to the pulling of events. Maybe more where that came from might be the message this morning. Right, it's 22 minutes past 8 on this Friday morning. Friday the 13th, fittingly, of March 2020. And here's what we've picked out for you from the top five that we want to get into you. This morning, GAA training and the that we've just been hearing about there from Alan, and the calls of Paul Flynn as well. Callum Hudson-Odoi, the very latest to test positive for coronavirus, and he's had some things to say on social media this morning, so we'll bring you those your way in just a moment. Owen's been through the tipster's tips for the fourth and final day of Cheltenham, which goes ahead today, and we'll bring you those in just a couple of moments' time. The ramifications of coronavirus on the careers of Stephen Kenny and Mick McCarthy is an interesting one that Liam Mackey in the Irish Examiner muses over this morning, so we'll bring you those thoughts in just a few moments' time. And Ronan O'Gara, too, has some interesting things to say, even not in related to coronavirus. So that's also in the Irish Examiner this morning. We'll bring that your way in just a moment. But the GAA, we mentioned, it's across a lot of the newspapers this morning, on the in the Irish Independent, the GPA Chief Flynn warns counties over a training ban. This is a very important step. We touched there on the heft of the GAA and the really crucial role that an association like that can really get the troops off their feet can play over the coming weeks and months. Like, you'd almost want to hear a little bit more from them, but certainly hammering home that idea that collective matches, clearly that has to be something that isn't going to happen. And after that, collective training, because you can see how, like, we've seen this before, it's been in very different spheres, right? Like, in terms of calendar training bans, how, you know, teams have the will to get around those. Like, this takes an engagement from society to understand that collective training is just something we shouldn't be doing.
Well, that's clear, that's obvious, and that is more important than anything else, that people who get together in groups for training at this point are clearly putting themselves into some situation of danger. But I do wonder if the GAA now needs to just get a little bit ahead of this and ask themselves, why will there be collective training going ahead over the next couple of weeks? And the reason why collective training might be going ahead for the next couple of weeks is because there might be a conclusion to the Allianz Football and Hurling Leagues. We don't know. There might be a football and hurling championship starting at the start of May, and there may be the resumption of club duties at some point during the month of April. All of these things we don't know, and in fairness to the GAA, they can't really make a guess on when they will be able to resume proceedings on that front. So you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place here as to whether or not to actually call off matches all the way throughout April at this point to ensure that training can't be done before the 29th of March. So it's a tricky one, because you can see why teams might want to remain on edge a little bit, just to say to themselves, right, so are we going back playing football on or hurling on the 1st of April then? And do we need to be fit and raring to go? Do we, like, I can sympathise a little bit with why these sessions might be a few interested parties in them. So if you put a blanket ban on all of that, at least, then at least everybody's at a similar level of not having collective training done or something like that. I don't know what the solution is to this, but I think anybody with a reasonable outlook on this would be able to suggest that even throughout April, it looks like the GAA calendar won't be proceeding. So that means the club game is going to be seriously affected. Like, we've seen coronavirus cases in GAA clubs already. So it's a serious health threat. The number one priority here is that these gatherings of humans aren't happening. the secondary thing to that is teams wanting to be fit for the resumption of games at some point down the future. As I say, and just to push that again, that is a secondary concern, but it is still a concern. So I can see the story here, and I can see why it might be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, you mentioned a bit earlier in the week that, like, I think it was yourself, that people want to be told what to do. Like, I think that's why people are at Cheltenham today, to be honest, like, that they've been told that this thing is fine and they're blissfully happy to be sort of operating blissful ignorance around that, I assume is my assumption, because it's interesting to see in this country how over the last 24 hours since the Leo Varadkar statement yesterday, things have really significantly moved on, and that people have started to understand, actually, if we continue in this way, we're going to be in the shit. And I do think, I agree with you on that point, I do think that people actually want to be told what to do here. And that's where that people like the GA and the GPA coming forward and saying, here are our firm thoughts on this thing, and here's how we recommend how you proceed. If there are people after that who decide that, actually, do you know what, we'll be grand and we'll just get about training, like, that stuff needs to be called out at the highest possible level. And hopefully there is enough leadership in the various clubs and counties around the country that there's somebody within those setups that can go, lads, this is stupid. It's beyond stupid. Let's press pause. The one thing is, right, the one thing that the GAA has going in its favour, and this isn't hard and fast, right, but the one thing it has in its favour above where professional soccer might be at or professional rugby might be at is that, by and large, and I know this isn't 100% waterproof because I know there are sponsorships and there are other elements that operate around it. I totally get that. So I'm not saying this is 100% true, but by and large, there are nobody's job is at stake here. We can press pause on all these fixtures. We can either come back to them in April. Cum Keys is writing this morning about the protection of April club month, likely to put the squeeze on intercounty games. In the context of life and death, who cares? It's nobody's life is at nobody's job is at risk. It's much better that we sort of pay attention to public health and safety in a way that obviously this is going to have a knock-on impact on people's livelihoods in other areas.
But at least give some further definition on that, I would have thought. Again, I'm going to accept that it's impossible to do that right now, but over the next couple of days and weeks, it may be possible to say, listen, April is going to be a bit of a dead zone again for GAA, and that is fine. And it comes back to what you said there about this announcement yesterday. I think, in a very strange way, the reaction and the emotion of a lot of Irish people when Leo Varadkar made a speech in Washington, D.C. yesterday was relief. Just being told what to do. This is what is happening. Tell us what to do and we will do it. And I think that is 100% the case when it comes to all sport. I don't think you'll see anybody reasonably making an argument, kicking up a fuss about anything being cancelled, but just make the call and be definitive with it. I think if we're getting into comparisons with our friends across the water in the UK, I think we've obviously dealt with this in a very favourable manner compared to them. And I think, in fairness, once that was made by the government yesterday, the sporting organisations got in line and followed that. Now, the thing is, this seems to be the trend. It seems to be a situation where we saw it a couple of weeks ago with the IRFU. The government need to make a statement and then the sporting body follows. That happened a couple of weeks ago with the IRFU and the Italy game. It happened yesterday with all Irish sport. So the current government directive is 29th of March. If we expect any further movement for cancellations of GAA, say, in April, it will probably require government statements and for them to say we are actually going to elongate this kind of almost lockdown that we've got going on in this country into the month of April. So I would hold my breath in expecting us to have any clarification on this about whether the GAA season will actually start as planned, because I don't expect the government to come out and give us any new information for a week or two at least in terms of elongating anything beyond the 29th of March. So it's still very much TBC, but as you say, the sensible decision is just don't train. How do you enforce this? I don't know, but just maybe hope that at least on an intercounty level and at the very top club teams, they have the sense to know that being fit and being ready for whenever club action or county action returns isn't as important as your own health and well-being.
Yeah, one last thing for me on this, and it will be on the broader point. I think it'll be interesting to see over the next, I think you're right, probably in the next week or 10 days, the government are going to come out again and update that, like, the curve of positive tests is now obviously going to increase rapidly, and so that there will be any change in the stance of lockdown in 2 weeks' time, to me, is doubtful. We'll see. I'm sure the government will come out and update us again in a week or 10 days' time and give us fresh dates around all that. So I think we can sort of assume that we're moving into that territory to April and beyond. In terms of sport anyway, at least. And also, will be interesting to see, and I hope that I'm sure that the government have been paying heed to what's going on at Cheltenham and the numbers that are going to be flooding back into this country, that probably already have started to flow back into this country, who haven't got the grasp on where we're at with this crisis, because they've been in, not only have they been in a different country, in a different territory, who are treating this differently than us, I suppose, let's be kind to say that, and also been in the bubble of just been sort of enjoying themselves over the last few days and haven't been paying much attention to this. But how we treat those people as they come back into the country, I think, is going to be crucially important. And I don't think saying to them, oh, listen, spend a couple of weeks at home and self-isolation is enough. I think we need to be actually a little bit more proactive than that. We've seen measures taken in South Korea and in various other countries, very proactive measures taken in South Korea and other countries to stop the spread of this thing. And I hope that we're considering some of those with the tens of thousands of people that are going to flow back into this country over the next 24 hours.
Just on the last point on that as well, it's a good point you make about the people coming back in, especially from Cheltenham. Like, I think we were all in a situation yesterday where it's one of those I remember where I was moments when Farad Kerr is making a speech, when Coveney and Harris and Houlihan are making, and Ted Humphreys, of course, making their speech yesterday. It was one of those moments where you're like, okay, this is significant. This is not something we will forget for a long time. Put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's at Cheltenham yesterday and they don't have that same impact. So I wonder if the severity of the situation is even imprinted in their mind to the same degree that it is to all of our minds, people who've been sent home, people who are at home watching this entire thing unfold. So there perhaps is a sort of wake-up call required when people come home, almost replay the tapes to them and say, listen, this is what is going on. This is a hugely severe situation that, that Ireland has been forced to put itself under over the last couple of days. So, I don't know, the Cheltenham element is a joker in the pack that really Ireland did not need right now.
Yeah. Right, one of the stories that's emerged over the last 24 hours is that the Chelsea forward Callum Hudson-Odoi has tested positive for coronavirus. You can see it there. The full story's up on offtheball.com. He's been out in the last little while up on social media, and we can take a look, I think, at what he's had to say.
Hi, guys. As you may be aware, I had the virus for the last couple of days, which I've recovered from. I'm following the health guidelines and self-isolating myself from everybody for the week. I hope to see everybody soon, and hopefully be back on the pitch very soon. Take care.
Yeah, Callum Hudson-Odoi reassuring everybody that he's in fine health and seems to have come through that as well. And as mentioned, the last point on it in relation to the Premier League at least, that there's an emergency meeting this morning. All indications are, and all reports from well-placed sources over the course of the morning and last night, is that they are going to postpone games this weekend and review it after that. There's a phone conference we're led to believe that'll happen in 2 hours' time at 10:30 this morning, with a suspension of several weeks most likely, which will also take in the international break. Abandonment unlikely at this stage is what we're being told, and that seems only reasonable to me at this point as we work through the next few weeks and see exactly where we're at with this thing, and then make a decision at that point. So that's where that is at. And we're going to leave that there for the minute. As we mentioned, the Gold Cup Day at Cheltenham does continue. And Owen, you've been digging deep, seeing what people have to say about it. Tips
No, I haven't been digging deep at all. I am merely the messenger. Jake O'Donnell of Off the Ball has been digging deep all morning, pouring through the newspapers for the last couple of hours to bring you the tipster table. You can check out his piece on offtheball.com. As I say, I'm merely the messenger this morning. He's been doing all the legwork on this all week. And atop his tipster table at the moment is Off the Ball's very own Tom Malone, with 6 winners so far this week. He is having a sensational week, I think it's fair to say. He is joint top, I should say, with Jane Mangan of the Irish Daily Mail. You've got Peter Scudamore of the Mail as well, Marcus Armitage of the Daily Telegraph, Wayne Bailey of the Irish Independent, and Chris Cook of the Guardian also having an exceptional week. They all have 5 winners. Michael Verney amongst the tipsters who have tipped 4 winners so far this week. So a good week for all of them. Let's go through today's tips and where the consensus lies. The 130 is the JCB Triumph Hurdle, and the favourite solo at odds of 4-1 is being tipped by the most people today. Tom Malone of Off the Ball in amongst those names. Really, we could just go through Tom Malone's tips and they might be as good as the tipster consensus table this morning. So solo at odds of 4-1 getting a lot of love, as is Goshen at odds of 5-2. Sorry, solo isn't favourite because Goshen at odds of 5-2 would be favourite. You've got the likes of Tommy Lyons of the Irish Examiner and Michael Verney of the Irish Independent tipping Goshen there in the 130. There's a big outsider there in Hookup at odds of 40-1 as well, being tipped by Rob Wright of the Times and Rory DeLargy of the Irish Daily Star. At the 2:10, the Randox Health County
handicap hurdle. Saint Roch at 6-1 is being tipped by a good few people. Ruby Walsh with the Irish Examiner amongst the tipsters there, tipping that horse as an each-way bet as well. Looks to be a lot of love here as well for Stolen Silver at odds of 11-1 as well, with five tipsters putting their weight behind that horse. The 250 is the Albert Bartlett Novices Hurdle. Latest exhibition at odds of 9-2 is getting a lot of love there. A couple of nap bets there. Tony O'Hare of the Racing Post and Michael Burney of the Irish Independent saying latest exhibition at odds of 9-2 is their nap of the day. Fury Road at odds of 15-2 is also getting a good bit of love on that one. The Gold Cup then, the big one, 3:30. Album Photo at odds of 10-3, as you can imagine, getting most of the tips this morning, but it is not a consensus by any stretch of the imagination. Delta Work at odds of 9-2 is getting a lot of love in that, as is Lost in Translation at odds of 15-2. I'm trying to look for Tom Malone's tip here. Don't exactly have it in front of me, so you're going to have to check out Tom's article very shortly to get his Gold Cup tip. That's the thing about Tom Malone. He leaves you wanting more. He's given you a couple of tips here in this article, but not all of them. At 4:10 then, the St. James's Place, Fox Hunter Chase at 4:10. As I say, Manella Rocco at odds of 10-3, getting most of the tips in that one. As I said, actually, Billaway at odds of 5-1 seems to have pipped that by one tip, it seems. Ruby Walsh, Patrick Mullins, Michael Burney, amongst the names, tipping Billaway at odds of 5-1. So a lot of powerful names behind Billaway. Hazel Hill at 11-2 as well has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 tips going into that one as well. So there seems to be a two-way tie there between Hazel Hill and Billaway. Then the second last race of the festival at 4:50, the Johnny Henderson Grand Annual Handicap Chase. You've got Chosen Mate at odds of 5-1, getting a good few tips, as is Eclair du Beaufort at odds of 7-1. And then finally, the 5:30, the Martin Pipe Conditional Jockeys Handicap Hurdle, Front View at odds of 7-2, getting the closest thing resembling a consensus in the entire day's card, really. So Front View at odds of 7-2, if you were to trust the tipsters and the tipsters alone, looks like the closest thing to a consensus we have today, Adrian.
Are your housemates in bed?
Yes.
That must be Why? A fairly surreal experience for them.
Oh, I would say it's a norm. They say, like, this is me. I just walk around listing off horse racing tips all the time when I'm, you know, cooking the dinner, you know, watching television.
He's at it again. Is that what you're saying? That's, they're sitting up having the tea in bed saying, geez, there he is, off again.
Yeah, I am an absolute delight to live with.
You know the way hurling has its own racing has its own speak, its own lingo.
Yes, what I do.
What is nap? What's the word nap?
What do you mean? What is the word nap?
What is it?
Well, it's your sure thing of the day.
No, but like, what's it all about?
Oh, I don't know.
It comes from poker, I think, doesn't it? Your nap hand.
See, this is.
Sorry.
No, absolutely, Tom. How are you getting on?
Yeah, good.
The man
good.
Of the moment.
I just appeared so there. Yeah.
Comes from a card game called Napoleon.
Ah, okay.
I know this.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I did know that. I did know that.
Well, I mean, it's, you knew it now. Like, do you know what I mean?
Like, you're worse than Chris Tarrant with the arrogant sort of. We give you the check, but we won't.
Yeah,
well, I've not just googled it. That's like clearly that's
Chris Tarrant, the producer, is here. No, I knew it all along.
But it's one of those words that's just existed in the ether, and you're like, oh, nap of the day, absolutely.
Yeah, nap of the day. Phil Egan's daily joke about his nap of the day is that it's 3:15 for Ben.
It's a good gag. It is a good gag. Tom, I mean, we should have some sort of a, you need to get your own theme tune now. Success this week.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about this week.
You're on top of the leaderboard here. That Owen
yeah,
has
some really. I mean, Milan native yesterday really kind of personally dug me out of a bit of a hole, but it put some nice gloss on proceedings. So a couple of big price winners yesterday. Sorry to Berlay and Milan native, even though ones who kind of would have been stronger on it, shorter prices actually got beaten. The two big price ones really got us out.
Yeah,
Tom, who's your Gold Cup tip?
Santini, slow horses can win Gold Cups.
Is, going against Album Photo.
I just think Album Photo has a really, really good chance. I just watched the race back and absolutely everything went perfectly for him last year. And it's very difficult to come back and do it. He's had the perfect prep, but he's a worthy favourite. He's a little bit short. Santini, I think you can get 5-1 about him and you can get an each way on that. So if you back him each way, you get your money back as long as he finishes in the frame. And like I say, he just will not stop up that hill. He's a bit of a...
He loves the trip, is that the vernacular?
He's just a bit of an ignorant galloper. He's a bit like a centre half who just won't stop. He's an absolute tractor of a horse, and I just think he just won't be out of the frame.
An ignorant galloper, by the way, needs to go down. I think that's more of an... I would sense that's more of a term of abuse than...
Well, the same would apply actually to horse I really fancied a big prize as well called Ione, who is exactly that. I mean, he's a big prize in the Albert Bartlett. But all he does is stay in gallop, just whether he does it quick enough. But at 28-1, he's one to keep an eye on the Albert Bartlett later.
Shane, you look like you're itching to get in there.
Well, I just think it's counterproductive, isn't it? But backing a horse that isn't fast. You said it's a tractor of a horse.
Absolutely.
The Gold Cup is fast in a race.
3 miles and 2 furlongs of relentless gallop where they just pick it up Denman style, a circuit from home, and it's like the classy athletes just cannot deal with that kind of level of just pace and power. And it's just like, why wouldn't the world's best footballer be able to sustain a relentless period of tackle practice in rugby? Because they just don't have the physical attributes to deal with it. And that's just what happens in a Gold Cup. It's a war of attrition, as was the previous Gold Cup winner, but it is a war of attrition. You think about they jump 5 fences in the last, I think, half a mile or three quarters of a mile of the Gold Cup, whereas the Triumph Hurdle earlier on, the 4-year-old hurdlers jump 3 hurdles in that time. So coming at the end, so after 2.5 miles of relentless gallop, they still have 5 furlongs to go, and up the hill and tacky ground. You just need to stay and stay and stay and then stay some more.
I've been given a lot of thought over the last few weeks with our Swim for a Mile training about everything that's going on about your own personal battle.
That's always my thought on you and Swim for a Mile. You are like our Gold Cup horse.
Well, hold that thought. So I've been thinking about, like, there's two things about this thing, and we're obviously pressing pause on it for the minute, given everything that's happened, but we will come back to it again down the track. Your own, obviously, ability. So each individual's ability to swim this thing, you'll be absolutely fine. You could go and swim, I'd say, 4 miles now if it was put to you, you'll be absolutely fine. But there's a lot of us who are just trying to cover the distance, and so we're very involved in our own thing. And then Owen was coming from such a low base that I think everybody's very enthusiastic behind him to try and get this thing done. But I've been given so much thought to, like, what it is that best describes Owen's approach to this and how he's come on over the last
meteoric rise.
Ignorant galloper.
So hold on a minute. Am I Santini then?
You are an ignorant galloper.
I am Santini. Thank you very much. A tractor of a horse. Owen, tractor of a horse. Sheehan is my new legal name.
There you go. Change your Twitter bio.
Adam Lacey on YouTube wonders if anyone is going to turn on each other in a zombie apocalypse, it's the OTBAM lads.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Luckily, we're all separated in different rooms, so we're just sniping from a very safe distance.
Snipe from afar. Normally, I'd ask you now sort of what's happening. What's not happening might be...
Yeah. Conference call between Premier League and his clubs this morning to decide whether or not the weekend's games will be postponed. OTB understands that there will be 2 options on the table, a temporary suspension or matches played behind closed doors. And according to OTB sources, temporary suspensions now look likely. That, of course, in the back of the news that Arsenal's game tomorrow has already been cancelled after Gunners boss Mikel Arteta tested positive for the coronavirus. Chelsea player Callum Hudson-Odoi, has also tested positive for COVID-19 with their full squad and staff now in self-isolation, as are the entire Arsenal squad and staff as well. The 19-year-old showed symptoms on Monday and hasn't been at the training ground since. Actually, on the pitch, in a rare bit of actual sport, last night's 5-0 Europa League last 16 win for Manchester United over LASK was played behind closed doors. Odion Ighalo again scored, this time his 4th goal in 3 starts. And United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says the striker's impact has been clear for everyone to see.
Odion has done really well when he's come in, and he's enjoying himself, and he will improve and get better. But he has qualities that we saw in him that we needed, and we'll still need those qualities for next season. So let's see what we do.
Elsewhere, our Wolves earned a 1-1 draw at Olympiacos in a game played behind closed doors, while the fans at Ibrox got to see Rangers beaten by 3-1 by Leverkusen. Of course, when those second legs take place will depend on the outcome of a meeting next Tuesday of UEFA stakeholders. On the Off the Ball show last night, PFAI General Secretary Steve McGuinness warned that the coronavirus outbreak could have catastrophic consequences for League of Ireland clubs.
From a League of Ireland point of view, is postponing the league for 2 weeks a better scenario than playing games behind closed doors?
100%. A lot of our revenue is matchday revenue. A lot of our clubs survive on matchday revenue. We're not lucky enough, like leagues like England, Spain and Italy, where there's huge TV deals and sponsorship deals that can back up a league. I mean, there's already clubs flagged that if, even 2 weeks, that they would be in trouble financially having to continue to pay players when there's no matchday revenue coming in. And that's obviously the FAI have assigned one of the employees to look exactly at what the figures are at each individual club and the effects of no game receipts. And then discussions had with the government and with UEFA upcoming to assist their clubs in ensuring that staff, not just players as well, there's obviously coaching staff and there's the secretaries and there's other people around the clubs that would find themselves, and the clubs find themselves in huge financial difficulties. There is a number of clubs that would be okay, but there's quite a number as well that wouldn't be. So there are discussions that are going to happen with obviously Gary Owens, the new CEO of the FAI, and Niall Quinn, that need to take place over the next, over the coming days to ensure that we can't lose clubs while this is going on. And at the moment it's preliminary the 29th, but there's nothing to say that won't go beyond that. So there are discussions that need to take place, and we're one of them leagues, Nathan, that's really like we're a small league in Europe, and we are really open. This has potential for catastrophic effects for some of our clubs if this goes on longer than even the 29th.
Yeah, of course, that, of course, on the back that the FAI, along with the GAA and IRFU, took the unprecedented step of suspending all games for a two-week period in response to the coronavirus. Declan Carey, the Cork City chairman, was speaking to Newstalk Breakfast earlier about the impact suspending the Electricity League could have on clubs. And Carey hopes that maybe some fans could buy tickets for those cancelled matches or make donations, perhaps even buy merchandise if they are in a position to do so, just to try help clubs through this period.
Yeah, you know yourself, Shane, the League of Ireland clubs themselves, gate receipts are of huge importance to us in terms of our overall cash flows and revenues and what we get by from season to season and week to week. It's going to be extremely difficult. We've communicated now to all of our staff and players, you know, what our policies are going forward, and look, it'll be extremely difficult to work with. And look, we're not the only League of Ireland club in this position. And look, I suppose at this stage we just hope now that the League of Ireland community will band together and all help each other, and supporters of clubs will still support clubs in whatever way they can, whether that be financially or just help out in any way. The show must go on behind the scenes still, and we'll continue to still working hard in the background to make sure that everything you know, remains as stable as possible for our staff and players and employees and volunteers. So look, it's extremely difficult, but look, in I think League of Ireland clubs are resilient and used to these challenging times, so we'll pull together and hopefully we'll come out the other side of it sooner rather than later.
I don't want to ask you specifically about your club because it's probably not fair, but let me just ask a more general question.
Yeah.
Would you be worried that a League of Ireland club might more than struggle to make ends meet, might actually just fail to make ends meet during this period of time? And could go out of business?
That is definitely a possibility. It's the same as any business all over the country. When you take away your primary source of income, you know, what can you do? Look, we'd hope, and there's already discussions ongoing to prevent what you just said there. It's definitely a risk. It's no different to the risk of any other business in the country. And you would hope that the FAI, the government, UEFA, wouldn't allow that to happen.
Yeah, Declan Carey there, Cork City, obviously in conversation with Shane on News Talk Breakfast this morning. I love that idea, and I love the spirit behind the idea of whether it's buying vouchers for yourself or for others, buying match tickets, sort of that forward pay. I love that idea. The thing it misses is that there will be, as Declan Carey has identified, a number of people who will be able to do that. There will be a number of people who are also getting the squeeze on them now.
Yeah, who are in the same boat as the clubs.
It's not to assume that everybody's sort of now going to be in this fantastic position, that the money continues to flow in. And that's the one slight concern I'd have with that. I love the spirit of it, and I love the fact that we're all rallying around and looking for solutions to things. Like, I think that's fantastic, and we're going to need that, I would think, over the next while. But Just one little caveat on that.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Meanwhile, in boxing, Michael Conlon scheduled a match against Colombia's Belmore Preciado next week has been called off, obviously due to the coronavirus. That was due to be at Madison Square Garden on St. Patrick's Day. And in golf, I mean, a huge announcement this morning from the PGA Tour. The Players' Championship obviously cancelled in Florida after day one. Then the PGA Tour have come out this morning and suspended all golf activities right up until the Masters. So a big move there from the PGA Tour. And finally, in racing, just quick mention on Albion Photo, he is among the favourites for this afternoon's Gold Cup. A big one, of course, going to post at 3:30. We'll have loads more of that, though, on the Cheltenham Show.
When a conservative body like the PGA Tour are making that call and you're going in the opposite direction, you know you're really hanging out there on the right-hand side.
Yeah. It's very difficult. Look, when you are at Cheltenham, as John said, you do end up in a bubble. But they just really need to just stick their head out of the tent for a few hours.
And also, we just need to be aware that as a government and as a country, just need to get our shit together for when these people are coming back in, to make sure that it's properly messaged about how they should behave. And I don't know, the 2 week sort of isolation thing is grand.
I'm not sure that message has landed in the Cotswolds, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. Right, Tom, you're going to be back a little bit later on
to
tell us about some more of your tips and plenty more besides as well. Do keep your comments coming into us. And just to reiterate as well, Tom mentioned there in relation to the Premier League, it does seem plenty of sources this morning, Dan Rowan of the BBC and plenty more besides as well, suggesting that the Premier League is going to be suspended. There's an emergency meeting that will take place at 10:30 this morning and that game's going to be postponed this weekend. They'll take a call on that after that, and it's at 10. Is that right? 10 a.m.? Is that what you're saying to me? 10:30. So that's what we assumed happened there. What Tommy was actually saying was, Kevin Kilbane is on the line. Good morning to you, Kev.
Good morning, Adrian. How are you keeping?
I'm all right, I suppose. I'm fit and healthy, and that's as good as you can ask at this point. How are you keeping?
Yeah. How is everybody in studio there? Everybody good?
Yeah, we've not many is the thing. We're heeding the advice from Leo Varadkar yesterday, and we've got teams here, hither and yon is the approach, and you were due to be in with us this morning as well. Obviously, we weren't in a position to be able to do that, but sure, look, here's where we are. First things first, you were watching the United game last night?
Yeah, United, very impressive. Actually, I mean, I think as we've seen this week, playing behind closed doors, I don't think it's certainly helping some of the sides. Olympiacos, you know, whenever anyone's seen Olympiacos play at home, they give the very good sides a decent game, but behind closed doors, the other night it was poor. Last night against United, very poor. Valencia the other night as well played behind closed doors. It's not giving them any advantage, and you just feel as though it's the right time just to put everything on hold, give everyone a break, give everyone a breather from it all now, and let's concentrate on the more important things, because United cruised through the game last night. It was cruise control, honestly. It really was.
Yeah, the quality, we were talking to Andy Mitten a little bit earlier in the show, sort of making the point that obviously it's hard to judge United on the basis of quality last night. Like, they're not they're a badly financed team in relation to Premier League sides, obviously without a lot of players, no crowd in. Like, how do you judge it? But that said, obviously they go ahead and they thump last night and do it very impressively. John Giles was on the show last night, Kev. He was talking about the impact of Bruno Fernandes, and trying to sort of represent his point. He was saying that he's a fan of Fernandes. He was a fan of what he brings to the game, what he brings to that team. But he was making the point that he's not so sure about him when United are on the back foot, that maybe he disappears out of the game a little bit in a way that he'd like to see him get a bit more involved at that time. What's your take on that?
Well, I'll tell you what, Adrian, I don't see his work rate being a problem. He worked so hard from the front, and he played last night off Odi Ighalo, so he's almost the first person in midfield that's got to go and put press on and discipline, getting back into shape. I've honestly not seen that sort of side of his game. I think the work rate that he's brought to United, I think he's given them a little bit of an extra spark without the ball as well. They look very, very well organised. I think it's 2 goals they've conceded now in 11 in this unbeaten run that they're on. They look well organised. Harry Maguire starting to seriously become a leader at the back for United now. Luke Shaw's playing extremely well. Even Fred's doing great alongside McTominay or Matic, whoever he's been playing against. But Fernandes at the tip of it, at the top of midfield, no, I honestly haven't seen that, because I think he's given United a bit more of a spot. Anyone that's seen United, and when we've been on the show over the last 3 or 4 years, we spoke about United being lethargic, on the ball, not moving the ball quick enough, but it's more being without the ball. It's just being prepared to sit off teams and just get back into shape. Van Gaal had that way about him. Mourinho had that way about him. Well organised, yes. distances right all over the pitch, but no energy without the ball. With Fernandes, they've got real energy, I think, with and without the ball now.
Yeah, it's the obvious sort of question that when a player like that comes on the scene and United become so reliant on him, and like there's so much good about United, I suppose, at the minute. Is it? Do you have any sense of it papering over the cracks that, like, Solskjaer's obviously, you see even when, like, he was brought off the other day, maybe it might have been in the City game, and Solskjaer's all over him with the high fives, and like, in a way that you're looking at it going, Solskjaer's like, you are going to be the reason I'm going to stay at this club for a little while longer. But is there any sense that, like, it's papering over the... In some quarters, it's been put out there that obviously Solskjaer is now that the grand plan is coming together. So is it that, or is it that Bruno is just a bloody brilliant player and they're very reliant on him?
Well, I think he is a brilliant player, yeah. I mean, you're very cynical, Ed, and you see things that we all can't see and maybe none of us will ever see. So that's maybe something very different. But I think with Solskjaer in there, for him to turn the results around the way that he has, because he was under serious pressure. United have been under serious pressure for a long time now. To get the results, the way that they've been playing, I have liked watching them. Certainly, organisation, they've been very good, as I was saying before, but they had to be better going forward. And the one thing that was very notable about them last night, particularly when they've got Fernandes in the side, he's playing in the 10 role, he's got very much of a free hit in role he wants on the pitch when they don't have the ball. Sorry, it's my phone there. I think they've got so many runners off the man on the ball now. If you watch even Greenwood's goal and Odi Nagalo playing the shoulder of defenders, because they're prepared to make that run now, because they've always got a player on the half turn that can take the ball. I think with Juan Mata, when he's played in that position, he doesn't have the energy. I think he takes too many touches on the ball personally. I think Fernandes is quite clever, where you'll see at times things not necessarily coming off him, but he'll be turning balls around the corner first time, looking for little given goals, 1-2s, and United haven't had that, I think, for a long time. So I think Solskjaer, of course, yeah, is he going to be part of the grand plan over the next 2 or 3 years? I don't know. We'll wait and see on that one. But United have got much better structure to the side. They've got, they look, as I said before, better organised when they don't have it. But certainly it looks to me like there's a lot more thought about things when they do have the ball now. And in the last third of the pitch, they're a lot better and creating a lot more chances.
Kevin, there's obviously widely varying reports about when Euro 2020 is going to be played. There's every chance it doesn't get played in the year 2020. It means Ireland could be facing into Euro 2021. It was obviously the championships that if we were to qualify for, it was going to be Mick McCarthy's last act as Ireland boss. In your view, if you're involved in the FAI now, do you honour the agreement that Mick McCarthy gets to take Ireland into European championships, or is it by date? Is it a situation where Stephen Kenny will be managing Ireland should we qualify for a tournament next year?
Well, it's a tough one. This is unforeseen, isn't it? If we qualify, I'd feel that Mick would have to take the side to the Euros. That's the way that it would have to be, and everything, I suppose, goes on hold for a year. It's such a unique situation, but what would you say to Mick if he got us to the Euros, we've qualified, and then all of a sudden he can't take the team to the major tournament? I don't know. I generally can't see that happening. It's such a strange situation. What would happen with qualification for the next World Cup as well, and of course the Nations League that's due to start in September as well? There's so many different things that's going to be happening before the Euros, where Stephen Kenny was supposed to be taking over. So, do you know what? I don't know how they can work that one if for qualifying in Nations League and all these sort of things. I don't know how they can work that. But if we qualified and the Euros were moved to 2021, I'd feel that Mick would have to take the job. Yeah, he'd have to stay in charge.
Yeah, I assume that actually because we're not in normal circumstances, and like I think you're right actually, and I think that it's a conversation with Stephen Kenny that you assume he responds to in a positive sense, that like, look, things have changed, here's a new timeline. Like, you couldn't really, if Mick sort of got them to qualify, you couldn't then say, listen, thanks a million, good luck to you. Like, that,
yeah.
I just don't see
I feel that myself, Adrian. I would. It seemed incredibly harsh on Stephen Kenny himself. You know, obviously he's waiting for the job. This is his ultimate job, the one he would have wanted his whole career. But I don't know. Can you imagine being within the FAI and you having to have these conversations now? It's bizarre the way that everything's transpired in the last few weeks, and certainly the level that we're at now, and we're still even talking about playing football with what's been happening. But I'd feel as though that Mick would. How can they not have a manager who's taken the team to the tournament when the contract was to be until the end of the Euros? If it shifted, regardless, I'd feel as though he'd have to stay in charge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's something that obviously to be monitored. I think we're just going to let you go, Kev. The one thing that I'm sure people are wondering as well, it must be a nightmare year to be planning a wedding. What is going to happen in your own personal situation this year?
We're talking sport this morning, Owen. You know, I've said to the powers that be, we're not talking anything about personal stuff now. So no,
I didn't ask you, Kev. That's that's the key here.
That's it. If there's not one ginger fella coming at me, there's another. So, you know, just give me a break, will you, lad?
Talking about Kevin Gabbard's personal life is definitely something we're going to have to do an awful lot more of, Kev, just so you're aware.
Is that right?
The sport diminishes, the graph of sport diminishing in your personal life coverage, is they're going to be going in opposite directions.
Yeah, no, but I, do you know what, Owen? I don't really know what's happening at the moment as well. Mm. So the plans are coming along slowly at the moment. But yeah, we'll hopefully have something in place over the next few weeks. So yeah.
Right. Listen, stand by your Skype, Kev, because we're going to be ringing you a lot over the next little while.
All right, not a bother.
Whatever part of the world you might be in. Good man. Take it easy. Kevin Gabbard on the line there. Great to chat to him as always. Get his thoughts on plenty of things. What do you think, Owen, by the way, if you're still there? What's your thought on what should happen with the Stephen Kenny McCarthy situation?
It's a very, very tricky one. I think it is an unusual situation where a manager to qualify you for a tournament and not be able to manage that team in said tournament. I think you kind of have to honour that. Like, it's a big if whether or not Ireland qualify, obviously, but I think it'd be a very, very difficult thing to turf him out after that. It's a shame because you do want to see Stephen Kenny get in there ASAP, nothing against Mick McCarthy, but because there are a bunch of youngsters about to come into the team that Stephen Kenny knows very, very well. And for the new Nations League campaign, you wanted Stephen Kenny to be their manager as they start to rack up the senior caps. So it's a tricky one, but I think really you've got to give it to Mick if he qualifies him for Euro 2021, if that is what it becomes.
Yeah, all right. I think that's your involvement for the morning over on, if I'm right.
Well, I think that is right. So enjoy the Cheltenham show. I'll be keeping my ears pricked. Maybe the last bit of sport we ever have.
I know. Tell your housemates we say good morning.
I think they already know that.
Good luck. Owen Shane on the line there from his gaff this morning. There'll be a little bit more of that over the next few weeks as well, we can assure you. But that's almost it from O2BAM for this morning. But do stay tuned. Our Cheltenham preview show with thanks to Paddy Power is up next. If you're listening at O2B Sports Radio as well, by the way, via the Go Loud app or indeed on the website on offtheball.com, you can just stay with us. You're going to hear Richard's rugger thing upcoming, which will keep you nicely entertained as we get prepped for the Cheltenham show. And if you're on YouTube, a new stream from Off the Ball will appear in the next few moments as well. Off the Ball, by the way, back in your radios tonight from 7 o'clock. We're going to have reaction from the final day of Cheltenham Premier League decision as well and what they're doing this weekend. That's expected very shortly, so we'll have plenty of reaction as the fallout from that. Hit subscribe to the O2BAM podcast, fully time-stamped as well, so it's really useful and making it easy for you to find out exactly what you want every morning from our two-hour show. This morning we had the sports pages and our top five stories as well. Couldn't get to all of those this morning. John Duggan, live from Cheltenham, but earlier, football with Kevin Caban and Andy Mitten, and the sports news with Tom Malone, and plenty more as well besides. So if you missed anything, you just head along to the O2BAM podcast. You can watch our highlights on YouTube. You can cast the show to your smart TV from there as well. Ireland's first and only sports breakfast show, O2BAM, live weekday mornings from 7:30. We're going to see you Monday morning. Owen is going to be in studio, and Nathan is going to be in his gaff. Stay tuned. Next, Paddy Power, Cheltenham show.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.